Okay, we're continuing with our series on David, so we're going to start with reading 1 Samuel chapter 17, and we're going to start reading at verse 57. As David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul, with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" So David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite." Now when he finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house any more. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David, with his armour, even to the sword, his sword and his bow and his belt. So David went out wherever Saul sent him, and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now it happened, as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. So the women sang as they danced and said, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. And Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?" So Saul eyed David from that day forward. And it happened on the next day that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand, as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. And Saul cast the spear, for he said, "I will pin David to the wall." But David escaped his presence twice. Now Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence, and made him his captain over 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. And David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore, when Saul saw that he behaved very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, because he went out and came in before them. Okay, we'll leave the reading at that point. We may come back to the rest in a moment, but as our passage opens, we find David standing before Saul, having just killed Goliath, and still carrying the head of the giant in his hand. Now Saul takes David and insists that he lives with him from this point onward on a permanent basis. And he takes David and gives him a prominent role in his court. Now, this will be a new experience for David, and it's going to prove to be excellent training for what comes afterwards. David finds himself taken from the flocks and put into a position of authority in Saul's army, perhaps commander of a section of the army or a chief of the royal bodyguard, something like that. We know he wasn't over the whole army, because that was Abner's job. He wasn't the general. But the king was obviously happy to employ him in some position that made use of his obvious military skills. But even though Saul put him in this position, it's clear that Saul didn't trust David, and he was very nervous about David's popularity. Now there are various reasons for this, but perhaps most clearly in Saul's mind is going to be the events we read about in 1 Samuel 15, where Samuel told Saul that the kingdom would be taken away from him and given to a neighbour of his. So from Saul's perspective, it's possible he was keen to have David somewhere who could keep an eye on him. And while that may have been Saul's plan, he didn't count on God's plan. He didn't count in particular on the friendship that would grow up between David and Jonathan. Something we see starting at this point, which was going to prove to be very useful to David in the future. It would help keep him alive when Saul turned against him. Now this friendship is particularly surprising from Jonathan's perspective, because Jonathan himself would have expected the throne on Saul's death. It's not unreasonable that the son of the king would expect to succeed him. But it becomes clear to Jonathan later on, but perhaps even starting at this point, that David could perhaps be his replacement, that Jonathan could be taken over the throne. Because whilst Jonathan wouldn't have known about David being anointed, he would probably have known that the kingdom would be taken away from Saul. But even with this in mind, Jonathan is drawn to David and will later use his own influence to preserve David's life. Now, in all of these events, we can see the guiding hand of God. God has promised David that he would be the king. And at the time that David was told this, it would seem like an impossible dream, wouldn't it? Everything would be stacked against David achieving the throne. David was a shepherd boy, a lowly, despised occupation. David was the youngest of his family. I mean, if there was some future for the family, all of his older brothers would have a claim ahead of him, wouldn't they? David was in every way insignificant. Yet God was ordering all these events so that the man he wanted to become king would achieve the throne. I mean, think of all the events that had to be put in place so far for David even to reach this point of his journey. David had to be born at the right time and place in history, of course. Samuel had to be sent to anoint him. But more than that, the Philistines had to come up against David with Goliath. And David had to be sent to visit the army at the exact moment that Goliath came out with his challenge. So we see God is ruling not just in David's life, but he's bringing the armies of the Philistines against Israel at the exact moment that David would be there in the army to hear the challenge. And then David had to be able to defeat Goliath. And for that to occur, David needed those years of training in the fields, looking after the flock, defending the sheep against the bears and the lions, everything that came against them. Now, David believed God when he was told he would be king. But now, at this point, he can start to see God working to achieve it. God is slowly bringing his purpose to fruition. Before, David may have believed he would be king, but there was no evidence of it in his surroundings. There was nothing in his day-to-day life that would give him any indication that that would be true. But it didn't cause him to doubt the promise. He believed God, even when circumstances were against it. He didn't become discouraged. And this, of course, is a tremendous encouragement to us. God has promised us certain things as well. He has promised that he will bless the preaching of his word. He has promised that his kingdom will grow, that his kingdom will continue to expand until he returns. He has promised us that there will be people from every tribe, tongue and nation worshipping before the Lamb in heaven. And he has promised that they will come to him through the preaching of his word. And that should be an encouragement for us to go out there and to preach and to see that promise come to fruition. And most of all, he has promised us that he will return at the end of the age to judge the living and the dead. And we have to be like David. We have to believe these things without doubting. Even though we can't see the evidence, we are called to believe. These things are fixed and they are sure in heaven. And we have to act in a way that proves we believe that. So how in particular are we called to act? Let's return to David for a while. If we read verse 5, what do we find? We find that David went wherever Saul told him. He behaved wisely. And it tells us that David was successful in everything that he did. He acted with wisdom and he achieved success. David was content to serve where he was placed and to let the Lord establish his kingdom and his purposes. David knew that he would be the king, but he didn't rush out there trying to force God's timing. He was content to accept that the Lord's timing is perfect and that these things would happen at the right time. And this whole time was a period of training for David. He'd first been the dutiful son to his father Jesse, doing what he was asked. Now he was seen to serve Saul faithfully. And you might think that David's faithfulness would see immediate material blessing from the Lord. But this very much wasn't the case. David was in a position of immediate popularity. The nation loved him for what he had done. He had saved them from their enemies. And Saul wasn't able to say anything against the way David behaved towards him. David went out and came in and did everything Saul asked him to do. So Saul had no cause to complain. Yet while this position might be seen to be a good one for David, if he doesn't become puffed up in his heart, he doesn't become proud and try to push God's agenda when he's up by himself, this is the beginning of a long period of trial and testing that would last maybe 10 years or more. So what went wrong for David? Well, verse 6 tells us that Saul became jealous of David. Verse 6 through 11, the people are singing, David has fainted 10,000s and Saul only his thousands. And this made Saul very angry. Now, Saul had no reason to be angry with David. He was still the king. Perhaps Saul was a naturally anxious man. Or maybe it's still those words from Samuel ringing in his ears, reminding him that someone is coming to take the kingdom away from him. But whatever the reason, verse 9 tells us Saul kept an eye on David from that time onwards. Now, it wasn't an eye looking out for David's best interests. David hadn't done nothing to cause the king's anger, but it was there nevertheless. Maybe Saul just couldn't bear to hear anybody else praised in the same sentence as himself. Whatever the reasons for Saul's anger, he decides to deal with it in a very definite way. He decides to get rid of David permanently. Saul sets out to secure his throne by attempting to kill David. Verse 10 recalls how he attempted to pin David to the wall with his spear. Now this phrase in verse 10, it's in this New King James, it says Saul prophesied inside the house. Now this could actually be better rendered perhaps, Saul ranted. Saul was raving inside the house. It was madness. Saul was very angry. The spirit comes upon him and he goes raving mad and attempts to pin David to the wall with a spear. The idea here is one of madness and anger. But what was this distressing spirit that came on Saul from God? Well, that's very interesting, and there are lots of different opinions, but I would say the easiest way to understand this is that Saul is now living in open rebellion against God. The whole pattern of his life is on opposition to the way God has told him to live his life. And God has now permitted something, whether an actual evil spirit or perhaps an evil desire of Saul's own making, to take control of Saul and cause him to act in this way. It's no excuse for Saul's actions. It doesn't help him to evade responsibility for them. But we do know evil men are often frightened by the righteous. The righteous acts of others cause, you see, as a reproach to their wicked lifestyle. I mean, there is a clear parallel. I mean, if we turn over to Mark chapter 6 for a moment. Mark chapter 6 and in verse 20. We're speaking about John the Baptist. It says Herodias held it against him and wants to kill him. Kills John the Baptist, but she couldn't. But Herod feared John, knowing he was a just and holy man. And he protected him. So fear. Herod feared John. Now why is that? Why does these evil people fear the righteous? It's because they can see and reproving their wickedness. It brings to them their own mind. They know they shouldn't be acting that way, but it brings the righteous way they should be acting to their mind. Because they're repressing that they know is right. John reproves Herod's wickedness. And now we find David's own righteous actions reproving Saul. Now, we saw earlier, although David had been raised to a high position in the house of Saul, David doesn't become see himself as being puffed up. He is still content to act as he did before to Saul. And when this evil spirit comes upon Saul, David did exactly what he did before and goes and plays the harp. I mean, he could have seen use his new position of authority as an excuse not to act the role of court musician. But he's still content to honour Saul, to act in his service in a way to relieve Saul from the distress he was feeling. And David's quiet contentment here to fulfil the role he's given even makes it obvious to Saul that God was very much with David, but God has departed from Saul. I mean, David is content to sit there and just evade the spear that Saul is throwing. He makes no attempt to retaliate against Saul or to use the attack as an excuse to fight back against Saul and establish his own position. And what can this teach us? Well, this certainly, that as God preserved David through these trials, he's more than capable of guiding us through the attacks of those who would seek to hurt us or to prevent the advance of his kingdom. I mean, nothing is going to defeat God's purposes here. God brought these purposes to pass in the life of David, and he will work out his plans and purposes for us today. Now, despite David's obvious lack of malice against Saul, Saul continues to become more paranoid, more afraid of David. And he decides that since killing him doesn't work, the only way to resolve the situation is to get David out of his sight. I mean, we see it read again verses 13 to 16. Saul removed David from his presence and made him the captain over 1,000. And he went out, David went out and came in before the people. David behaving wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Now when Saul saw that he behaved wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, because he went in and came in before them. So maybe that Saul is planning to get David killed in battle. Maybe he just doesn't want him around the house. But it's clear this move on Saul's part was orchestrated not by Saul, but by God, as the next part of David's training for kingship. I mean, we've seen David brought into the court, learning how the country was run. And what's he doing now? He's going out in there among the people, building his own popularity, becoming more popular among the people, and making himself the obvious choice to succeed Saul when the time came. But God is still working here. Remember, do you remember back in 1 Samuel 17:25? Now, what did Saul promise whoever killed Goliath? Well, let's read that for a moment. 1 Samuel 17:25. It shall be that the man who kills the giant, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house exempt from taxes in Israel. Now, it seems, strange enough, Saul seemed to be very slow to perform this promise when it came to David. I mean, it isn't until we get to verse 17 of chapter 18 that Saul officially introduces his daughter David and tells him he does plan for the two to get married. And when he does it, there is clear that there is an ulterior motive going on here. He plans to put David in the centre of the battle and let the Philistines take care of David. For he tells David, fight the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, let my hand not be against him, but let the hands of the Philistines be against him. So David does it. He goes out and he performs valiantly. He fights all the battles. And yet what happens? We get to verse 19. When the time came that Merab, Saul's daughter, should be given to David, she's given to somebody else instead. So what's Saul doing here? He's perhaps nervous about bringing David into his family at this point. Maybe something else is going on. But whatever the case is, David doesn't display any anger. I mean, he's been promised something, and again, Saul doesn't deliver. So he must be realised by now that Saul's not being honest, and that Saul doesn't trust him entirely. But Saul instead comes up with this other idea. He introduces David to his younger daughter, because he finds out she likes David. What's the plan this time? Let's read from verse 20 to verse 30 and we'll finish the chapter. So when Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. So Saul said, I will give her to him, that she may be a snare for him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law today. And Saul commanded his servants, communicate with David secretly and say, look, the king has delight in you and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law. So Saul's servant spoke these words in the hearing of David. And David said, does it seem a light thing for you to be a king's son-in-law? See him, I am a poor and lightly esteemed man. And the servants of Saul told him, saying, in this manner David spoke. Then Saul said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. So when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now the days had not expired, therefore David arose and went, and he and his men, and killed 200 of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins, and they gave him the full count to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. Then David gave him Michal, his daughter, as a wife. Then Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war. And so it was, whenever they went out, that David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. So Saul sets this dowry of 100 Philistine foreskins. Now he does this because he expects David to die in the attempt to obtain them. And David isn't stupid here, he knows what Saul is trying to do. I mean, to obtain 100 foreskins requires much more than a quick raid on a Philistine garrison and then run away before the enemy can catch you. David and his men have to first kill at least 100 men and then retain possession of the battlefield long enough to cut these foreskins off the bodies of the men, which isn't a quick process. Saul was trying to kill him off, really. I mean, he even made sure that David couldn't cheat here. I mean, he was asking for the one thing David couldn't get from the Israelites. So he knew he had to go out and catch the enemies. He wasn't going to sneak up on some unsuspecting Israelites somewhere and cheat. But David here doesn't falter for a moment. He trusted in God for his preservation. And before the allotted time was up, he came back with not 100, but 200 foreskins. So what can we say about David at this point? David has great confidence in divine protection. I mean, he knew he wasn't going to die in battle at this point because God had promised him that he would be king. And he knew that God would fulfil all his promises to him. Therefore, whatever Saul hoped, David didn't fear falling by the hand of the Philistines, even though he knew he had to be exposing himself on the battlefield in this way. But beyond that, we can see that David had great zeal for the good of his country. He never missed any opportunity to go out there into battle to serve his king, even though it might cost him his life. And also we know that David had a right understanding of honour. I mean, he wasn't interested in just being popular. He wanted to actually deserve the popularity. He wanted to earn the honour by hard work and effort. And he wouldn't accept this honour that wasn't merited. So after all this, Saul wasn't left with much choice. He had to let David marry his daughter. But notice here how God is clearly directing all these events. Saul tries repeatedly to kill David, yet David is miraculously preserved on every occasion. Saul tries to keep David out of sight, and now he's brought to David's own family, Saul's own family. All the time we see Saul's grip on the kingdom growing weaker while David's position becomes stronger and stronger. David's righteous actions are being vindicated, while the state of Saul's heart is being more clearly revealed to those around him. And the result here? Saul ended up more afraid of David than he ever was before. So while Saul's animosity towards David continues to grow, we find David's devotion to duty not wavering. We look here in the last verse. What do we find in the last chapter, verse 30? The princes of the Philistines went out to war again. And whenever they went out to war, David behaved more wisely than all the servants of Saul. Now we know from the Levitical law that David would not be required to go out to battle at this point. He only just got married. And men don't have to go out to war for the first year after they get married. But David loved his nation and was prepared to dispense with his personal comfort when his services were called on. So as we finish off here, let's see how God brought good out of this situation. Saul had to point it against David. He wanted to kill him off. Saul gave his daughter to him to be a snare. But even that marriage would add his kingship legitimacy when the time came. With Saul and his other sons dead, David, as a member of the royal household, was a clear choice to be king. I mean, Saul thought by arranging all these difficult missions for David, that he'd be taken care of by the Philistines. But it was these very things that confirmed his interest in the people, and the more David did for Israel against the Philistines, the better the people loved him. So his name was highly esteemed among the people. And that yet another thing that paves his way for the coming to the crown. God makes even the wrath of man to praise him, and often uses it to show his kindness to his own people. I mean, one thing that struck me this week in the newspapers, I was reading a quote by Amy McCarthy, who owns that bakery in Northern Ireland. And what she on record now is saying? That this experience of people standing against them, of them being taken to court, has been absolutely positive. She said if someone could turn back time, he would do it all again. It's been a time of real blessing for us. God has really strengthened our faith in him, answered our prayers, and strengthened our marriage and our love for each other. And we felt really supported and blessed by the Christian community. So we see as people come against them, they are being more blessed by God and by the Christian community. And that is the point I want to bring home tonight, this evening. Our God is faithful. He's able to protect his people and bring his purposes to pass. However bleak our circumstances may appear outwardly, however unlikely it may look, we know that God is in control. We know that he would have the ultimate victory in this world, that he is seated and reigning now, and that the gates of hell will not be able to withstand his kingdom. His victory is assured. And that is what we need to remember. Okay, let's leave it there for tonight.